You're listening to OU Podcasts.
Hey guys, welcome to Operation Ultra Episode 5. I'm Dustin.
And this is Rachel.
And we've got another great show lined up for you this week. We'll be speaking with Brandon Wilson, who's the race director of multiple races as part of Race NC. Races including Matamesquite Death March, 100K, the Croatan 24, and the Graveyard 100, which is coming up soon.
And then we'll be skipping over to Colorado to talk to Jeff Vierling of Tailwind, and he'll tell us about the story and science behind Tailwind Nutrition.
And we asked you this week, the question of the week was, how do you track your mileage? You know, I think as runners, a lot of us are type A personalities and we like to have plans. We like to schedule things. We like to track things, and tracking mileage is just an avenue for that kind of personality. So Rachel, how do you track your miles?
Generally, I am that type A personality, but as far as keeping up with the miles that I have run, I don't really focus on that. I'm more of the planning out my training and my schedule. So I always have a spreadsheet with the miles I'm supposed to run. And I run those miles, and essentially my tracking of miles is going back and adding up the training miles that were already on my schedule. And if I shorted a run or had to skip a run or reschedule a run, then I just go back and adjust those on my spreadsheet that has already been made out. But Dustin, I know you're a lot more meticulous about tracking the miles that you've run, and you are still streaking. So tell us how you're keeping up with that.
Not streaking in that sense of the word, but as in I've run every day this year. But basically, I've been a big fan of Running Ahead ever since I started running. That's runningahead.com. I guess I started tracking mileage there in 2008. So I can go back and look and see how I started, the mileage I ran back then. I've not always used it. There's been long periods of time where I've just stopped tracking entirely. And I think that usually corresponds to when I've been less excited about my training. So I'm back to using it pretty extensively now, and try to record just about everything in it.
I do like the charts and the graphs that it puts out. I always kind of geek out about those. So it's a great tool, and there's a lot of other tools out there, and that's why we asked you guys to contribute what you guys use, and we'll get to our winner in just a little while.
One of the races that Rachel and I started off, I guess it was a couple of years ago, we signed up for and drove out to North Carolina to do, was the Graveyard 100. Ultimately, it wasn't a good day for us. Both of us kind of struggled through issues and did not finish. It's both of our only DNF of any race we've ever done. But it's a amazingly beautiful course if you like being along the beach and a complete lack of elevation change. But we got the opportunity to speak with Brandon Wilson, who's the race director of the Graveyard 100. Hope you enjoy the interview.
Right now we have Brandon Wilson, who's the race director of many events in North Carolina and actually runs the Race NC with events like the new Matamesquite 100K and the upcoming Graveyard 100. Can you start us off by telling us a little bit about you? I know you're an ultra runner.
I'm a terrible ultra runner, actually, but and race directing makes it kind of hard to run as much as I want to. But briefly, I was a fat guy after I got out of the Marine Corps, gained a lot of weight. I was sitting around 300 pounds back in 2008 and needed to do something. And my daughter motivated me to get off my butt and start doing something. So I started, you know, kind of started in triathlons. Next thing you know, worked my way up to, you know, the iron distance tries, and I was really kind of getting tired of doing that stuff. The crowd wasn't really kind of my speed at all, and I heard there was an ultra run coming up. It was a 100-miler. I'd never done an ultra before, and I just decided I was going to do it, and I went and did my first ultra. It was a 100-miler, and I finished in 23 hours, 44 minutes. I was hooked on the crowd. I was hooked on everything about ultra, and so I just kind of spent my time doing as much as I could and running, and I was kind of the crazy guy in town that did running, and linked up with another crazy guy in town named Jimmy Ballard, did a lot of ultra runs, and that was kind of the history of how I got into ultra. And you know, I just enjoyed it so much. I called my wife one day when I was on the road driving to Richmond and said, you know, I have this idea, I want to put on a race. And you know, she said, well, what are you talking about? Well, I got this brilliant idea while I was sitting here driving down the road to put on a 100-mile race in the Outer Banks. And she laughed and she said, are you crazy? You know, we don't know anything about that. So, you know, long story short, we set out to learn everything that we could about race directing. We reached out to race directors that we knew and respected, and And we kind of got mentored through the process of how to do that. And that's kind of how we got started.
What year was that? And how did you get from that point to putting on the number of events that you have now?
We first started talking to folks about Graveyard, I want to say, in the last part of 2010 and 2011. And by February of 2011, we were pretty much in full swing. It was going to happen. It was a matter of, are we going to kick the first one off in 2012 or 2013? And, you know, we met with Blake Norwood and Rhonda Hampton with Umstead. I had a lot of questions and I reached out to them and said, hey, can you help me kind of think through some of this stuff? And they met with us in 2012 and we 100% committed to going ahead and doing it. And we put it out there in the first, it wasn't the first ultra we race directed, but that first Graveyard was obviously the first 100, and it was a humbling experience. And then as far as the rest of the races, you know, I'm inspired by what's around me in Eastern North Carolina. I'm inspired by the landscape. I do a lot of driving. I do a lot of, you know, hitting on roads. And when I find something that kind of inspires me, that's really where these races come from. You know, Nusiak was a trail that I was training on to train for a URA mountain run. And, you know, eventually every race that we have that we're putting on just came from, you know, a stretch of road that I stumbled across and said, this would make a great race. And that's kind of how it started.
And what was the first race that you directed?
The Nusiak Trail Run was the first ultra. I had directed some cycling events and some small runs, but the first out of the gate ultra that we did was Nusiak Trail Run. And that was in also in 2012.
How many races are you directing now?
I'm wanting to say either co-directing or directing, we're doing, I think, 9 this year. And we do timing on the side for other races too, but just straight up directing races, we're involved in 9 this year.
And of those, do you have a favorite?
Oh, they all are very special. They're all, it's kind of like children. Which one of your children's your favorite? You know, the right answer is none, but I do have some very personal ties to the Croatan 24. That's probably our most popular event, and that's probably our least known, to be honest with you. It's kind of one of those quiet ones everyone sits on, and we were told one time that I don't want to tell my friends about this race because then it'll sell out. But Croatan is very special to me because I was a Marine, and we have a lot of friends that are Marine Special Ops guys down at Camp Lejeune, and you know, they're very close to me, and that is a fundraiser for the Marsoff Foundation, Marine Corps Special Ops Foundation. 100% of that money goes with them, so that's a favorite. I put every ounce of what I've got into that race to make sure that it is the very, very best, which is what the Marine Corps is to me. But Graveyard has a special spot because it's the only 100, and it was really kind of that first big race that put us on the map. Nusiak is just totally different because it's, you know, the only real trail run we do. Death March is really special, you know, for a lot of reasons to me personally. And also it was special to have Gary Cantrell there last year. Having that guy there was an absolute hoot. So no, I wouldn't say one's more favorite than the other. I'd say I love them all, and they're all, I'm very passionate about them all, but for different reasons.
So talk a little bit about Croatan 24. That's on the road. I mean, what is that, a loop course? What's the size of the loop?
Croatan's a loop course. It's a certified loop that goes through a salt marsh. There's lots of raised bridges, and I mean, these bridges are built, man, these bridges withstand the hurricanes, and that's why they were built the way they are. They're huge raised aluminum footbridges. And the loop's a 1.36975 mile loop.
No, a little more exact than that. I mean, what is?
Yeah. Well, I certify courses with USA Track and Field, and I certified that one, so that's probably a number I won't forget. But you know, it's a small field. We limit it to 120 people. You know, we did have some elites, Valmir and Connie Gardner, and some folks come this year. And so it's in Cedar Point, North Carolina, which isn't far from Camp Lejeune. And it's actually done on Marine Corps Birthday and Veterans Day weekend every year. And what it is, besides being a fundraiser, it's a huge celebration of the Marine Corps birthday. Camp Lejeune High School comes out and they do a Marine Corps birthday ceremony, which is really neat. Unless you were ever in the Marine Corps, you would probably not ever have an opportunity to be a part of the birthday ceremony with the cake cutting. So they come out and do that for us before the ceremony. And we actually have all military members present get a special shirt that has their service on it. And we run the first lap behind the U.S. flag and all of the flags of all the services. And anyone that's there who's either current or former military actually runs behind their flag on the first lap.
What kind of participation do you get on that race?
That one sells out fast. We did something I probably won't ever do again this year. We maintained the wait list, but maintaining the wait list was kind of a pain in the rear. So what we committed to doing this year, starting this year, we're just going to open registration, and when it fills up, you know, it's just going to close, and that's going
to
be that.
Is there an aid station on the course? Are you able to have a drop bag there? Is it kind of set up to be able to come back by your gear?
Like I said, it's 1.3-mile loop. You know, we have a headquarters main aid station that's there the whole time for the whole 24 hours. We have an area for people to put crew bags down, so they can come and get the aid that we provide. Or they can get aid out of their bags, kind of whatever they want to do. And the aid station that we run, my wife actually runs that for the whole 24 hours. So, and she gets crazy with what she does there. Sometimes it amazes me. People come through and ask for the craziest thing, and she pulls it out of I don't know where. You know, she makes hot soup right there on the spot and makes burgers, and it's just kind of like a family reunion with a whole bunch of running.
You mentioned your wife. You guys are kind of a husband-wife team as far as the race directing goes. And Dustin and I work together, and we only do one event. I want to know how you guys do so many events and don't let it take over your life.
Well, she might tell you that it does take over our lives. but it's not just actually Heather and I, it's actually the kids too. You know, they're all involved. The kids probably know as much about fueling and hydration and had mixed ratios on Gatorade. And my daughter loves the time. She gets really mad if I stick her in the aid station because she loves the time. So, you know, the kids are all involved. It's a whole family ordeal. And they run ultras too. You know, my youngest, my 12-year-old, finished Marine Corps Marathon last fall. You know, Andy, who's now 15, he's done several ultras. He ran Holiday Lake, you know, one of Horton's races, loves Horton. He thinks Horton is the neatest guy in the whole world. So it's really kind of I would say if the whole family wasn't involved and the whole family wasn't involved in running and everything too, it'd probably break us apart. But ultra running has really been kind of the thing that unites us, whether we're putting on races or traveling to races or doing races together. It's kind of just what we do.
You mentioned Gary Cantrell previously. From most of what you've said, your races are mostly on the road, and it seems fairly flat, correct?
Absolutely.
So yeah. If Gary Cantrell is kind of out there, are you looking at putting on a Gary Cantrell-type event anytime soon?
Ooh, you know, I don't think you can do a Gary Cantrell event unless you're Gary. He is a special guy, very special to the sport. Getting to know him at any kind of level has been an absolute honor and a treat. And definitely he's a race director that I've studied. To put on a Gary Cantrell race unless you're Gary Cantrell is not possible, in my opinion. And to a certain extent, if you tried to copy what he's doing, I think it would be a dismal failure. So I would say no, we are not, certainly not going to try and do a Gary Cantrell type Barkley race. However, a lot of what makes Barkley is just the wacky personality and style that goes into the whole process that makes it. I would say in some ways, if all ultra race directors kind of have those quirks that make what they do unique. So for us, we do have some quirky stuff and that goes on in events. And, you know, I would say from a straight up in your face, this race is drop kicking you and making you want to quit. Mad Mesquite Death March pound for pound is probably harder than just about anything else we got going on. It was absolutely set up that way. You know, I don't put out any mile markers. I take every opportunity I can to lie to people, to mislead them and make that the most miserable possible race that we can. Yeah, and I enjoy it. I'm not going to lie.
So let's talk about that a little more. So tell us, what is Mad Mesquite, the distance, the way the course is laid out, et cetera, if we can trust anything you say?
Well, yeah, the cat's out of the bag now because people actually finished it that first year. But, you know, we when I laid out the course, we told them it was 100K. And if you look at the map, it actually says it's 62 point whatever miles. But the truth of it, it's actually like 66.2. and what I did that first year when I published the map is I took every single span from one turn to one turn, and I subtracted whatever distance I needed to off of every span so that it looked like 62 miles, even though it wasn't. And I had fun doing it. And so the actual distance is like 62 miles. And You know, we start them at the cemetery, the Fairfield County Cemetery, which is literally this old country cemetery in the middle of nowhere by a canal, and you run across the largest natural lake in North Carolina, you know, right down the middle of it. It's about 4 miles. It's just lake on both sides of you. And then you run around one half of the lake back to that main road that goes through the lake. Then you run back across the lake again and you pass the finish, but you don't get to stop because then you have to turn and go around the other side of the lake. And then you come back across the lake again to finish. And so it's, and it's just flat. You know, we joke about the elevation profile that's published for that because I just drew a red line on a map that goes from like half a feet of elevation to half a feet of elevation. But it really is almost that flat.
Was that a new race for you last year?
It was. Yeah, it was a new race. And Madam Mesquite is someplace that I was fascinated with when I came to North Carolina when I moved here. You know, the history of North Carolina is really neat. There's so much out there. And Madam Mesquite was just a place that I kind of fixated on that was really cool. And I was actually on my way back from driving gear to Graveyard the end of 2012. And my son was in the car. I was like, you know what? We don't have anywhere special to go. Let's take a detour and drive down through Madam Mesquite and just kind of hang out and look at everything. And when I drove down that 94 road down the middle of that lake, I loved it because as far as you can see until it disappears into the horizon, it is straight and flat. I mean, the road, when a car is coming at you down there, you can just see it forever because it's so straight and so flat. And Andy and I were just kind of looking at each other laughing. I said, man, we have got to do a race out here. And that's how it started.
The registration for Madam Mesquite just opened, correct?
It did, yeah.
And what is the registration fee and when is the race?
The registration fee is probably going to make people pass out when they see it because they see 100K and it's $300. But we did something different with that race. We called it the destination race. And the reason is there's almost nowhere out there to stay, and I really mean nowhere except this duck hunting lodge called Carawans. And these people, Carawans, they are just good old country people from Hyde County. Mark Carawan, his dad built that lodge, and Mark was born there in the lodge and raised in the lodge hunting and bass fishing in the lake. And they're still there, Mark and Lisa Carawan today. Second generation owners of that lodge. You know, when we met them and we told them we wanted to put on a race out there, usually people would be like, you're absolutely nutballs. We don't want anything to do with that. But they really wanted to get involved. And so what we do with that race is you pay $300 and all you got to do is show up. And you do have to be crewed because you would die out there without crew. Honestly, you really would. So you show up and that $300 includes your registration for the race, your shirt, your finisher's award. It includes lodging for two nights for you and your crew member that's coming. It includes low country boil that the Carawans make on Friday night. It includes a continental breakfast Saturday morning before the race. It includes meal for your crew Saturday night. It includes the Warriors breakfast or the Champions breakfast on Sunday morning when you're done. So, you know, you're getting four meals, a finisher's award. You know, there's a lot involved in that. And the majority of that $300 really goes straight across to Carawans to prepare those meals and to cover the lodging.
You know, for $300, you know, compare it to something like a Badwater where you pay an exorbitant fee and get nothing in return. It sounds like a pretty good value.
We like to think it is. And the finisher's award is something quirky there. The participants are required to carry a 50 caliber ammo can. And my wife, Heather, and my daughter, Rebecca, actually customize those for folks and to carry, and so they carry that can for the whole time, and that is the finisher's award. When you're after you get to carry that can all the way around that lake, you finally get to keep it and take it home.
Now, what is the weight of the ammo can?
It's like 5 pounds. You know, I didn't select it because the weight. I selected it because it was just awkward. I wanted something that I could just get in people's head with, and you know, something square with four corners on it that's kind of digging in your back or just being a pain with you. You're having to listen to the handle dinging on the lid. It was just something to get them mad about. If they want to be mad about something, they can be mad about carrying the can. But, you know, they invest a lot of time in researching the people that are coming if they don't know them. And, you know, we know one guy liked Iron Maiden, so they put Iron Maiden on the can. Another guy liked Pearl Jam. You know, Gary Cantrell got a conch shell on the side of his can. And it's girly. They put rhinestones and make them pink and glow in the dark and just crazy stuff. They have fun decorating those cans.
And when is the race?
It's the last weekend in July, and that is actually a very specifically selected date if you go back and look at the weather in Hyde County, which is notoriously terrible, and you actually look at the weather over the last 100 years, you'll see that the spike in weather, the worst 2 weeks of the year, the last week of July and the first week of August, and that's how I selected it. I selected it to be the worst possible weather that I could get for the Death March.
When you said into July, I kind of knew that was exactly where you were going there. But how hot are we talking? We're from Arkansas here, so you know we're used to 105 to 110 degree temps.
Yeah, it's gonna be. It could get that with a heat index. You're talking on average around 92 degrees and 100% humidity, and that place just soaks into your pores, man. There is something weird about Hyde County in the summertime besides the alligators and the snakes and all the stuff that you could run into out there. And the mosquitoes are known for their, the locals say, no, that's not a bird hitting you in the back of the head. That's a mosquito. So it's all the pests and just the whole area that gets in your skin there that just kind of makes it miserable, not just the heat or the humidity.
You said that you had some finishers last year. So how many did you have start and what was your finisher number like?
Well, we had 13 starts to digress again. The other thing, when you come to Madam Mesquite, we retire your number forever, obviously, because you're getting an ammo can with your number on it. So we went 1 through 13 last year. So this year the bids will start at 14. So if you come back, you bring your ammo can back to carry it again. And in time, I think it's going to be neat to see what kind of bid count we get up to. I'll be looking forward to seeing some of those people with those low can numbers come back. But we started 13 last year, and I think we finished 6.
For the difficulty, especially with the heat and what you really had me at was the 100% humidity, that seems like a fairly good, fairly high finisher rate for that kind of condition.
I was disappointed it was so high, to be honest with you. And I actually ran it last year while Heather directed an IDNF too. I did something probably a little overkill. I actually handcuffed my ammo can to my hand and gave away the keys. And that's actually not what bothered me. The can was probably the least of what bothered me. Around mile 28, I was having some other health problems and stuff, some arrhythmia that really was kind of concerning me. So I pulled for that. But it's a high finisher rate, I guess, for what it is. You were talking about the Gary Cantrell race. Gary Cantrell, remember, he designed his race so people could not finish. That was the goal. Madam Mesquite is not designed so that you cannot finish, and last year's results are proof you can finish, but you are going to have to embrace the suck to do it because it is not going to be a joyride in any way, shape, or form.
That sounds like a friend of mine who is a former military member. He runs and he carries around his pendle hitch, and it's something like 15 pounds on top of his 30 to 50 pound weighted vest, and does all of his running in that. So.
Oh, mercy. Yeah, that's terrible.
I'm going to tell him about your event and see if he can sign up for that. And maybe he'll throw some extra weight in his ammo can.
I'd love it. Yeah, I'd love to put some extra weight in the can. We could put some rocks or something in there. It'd be fun.
All right, so that's now that race is on my short list to consider, what about, let's talk a little bit about Graveyard as well. You know, Rachel and I went and attempted Graveyard your inaugural year in 2012. Unfortunately, we both had issues as both of my only DNF at any race ever. And Rachel's, her only DNF at any race ever as well. So tell us a little bit about Graveyard and what makes it unique.
Well, the Outer Banks are really just an awesome place to go and visit. And it's amazing to me how many people in North Carolina who've lived here their life have never been. Because it's just a beautiful place, and Hatteras Island, I mean, you talk about long straight roads, man, it's just a long straight road. What inspired me to do that race was the idea to run a stretch of road from the sand where it started up in Corolla and run it until it ended at the other end of the road, which is 100 miles later. And that's literally what the Graveyard course is. And obviously we call it the Graveyard 100. It is the Graveyard of the Atlantic. And when you look at the maps that they sell out there that show where all those shipwrecks are, there's more shipwrecks than land. It's just a incredible place. It is flat. They have some crazy weather out there. You don't ever know what you're going to get. That year y'all were there, we had rocking storms on Friday when y'all were checking in, and then the next day was absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, it could be perfect check-in weather on Friday, and then like we had last year, the weather was blowing over the roads, and they shut the roads down. We had to turn people around. So, and that is the Graveyard of the Atlantic because of you know, all of the Diamond Shoals and the shifting sands and the weather and everything that goes into that place just makes it not like anywhere else I've ever been.
We were there during the year where there won't be any better weather conditions for an ultra ever. Cool. It was about, you know, between freezing and 40 degrees. It was fairly cold, especially for that time of year and there. But then we had a tailwind all day. Now, did you have a fairly high finish rate there in 2012?
I want to say we had 70-something, 72% maybe finisher rate. For those conditions, I think it surprised people to see what the DNF rate was. And I want to say it was something like 31 or 32%. And what gets people there is, you know, obviously there's only an aid station basically every marathon. And you know, we do put some water stops in between those aid stations, but we specifically spread that out to make people pay attention to the detail. You can't just drop a bag on the ground and run a loop mind-numbingly, you know, run a one-mile loop until the clock expires. You have to plan there, especially if you're uncrewed. You have got to think about what's going in an aid bag. And I set it up so that you would have to, because, you know, when you're a solo runner and you get to aid station two at 42 miles, if you didn't pack it in that bag the night before, you don't have it. What we've seen both years is historically the people who DNF, they DNF because of miscues due to just mind dumps. I didn't pack. I didn't know it was going to be this cold, you know, just straight out unprepared. Unprepared for the cold, not layering with the right layers, unprepared for the wind. Cold is usually what gets people. That first year, you know, we had people calling that were behind dumpsters shivering, people that thought they were going to wear shorts all day that were near hypothermic. I mean, the carnage literally was almost exclusively because of logistical failures and failure to prepare for the weather.
The race is so different from any other ultra I've done. First of all, it's all asphalt. And like you said, it's very flat. So you're using the same muscles all the time. And what I found was because it's asphalt, I don't have the trail and the hills to slow me down. And my problem that year was I got going too fast. And then I had all sorts of stomach issues because of that. Do you see a lot of people that just have trouble adapting to the differences of your race?
We do. My goal when I set out to do Graveyard and I sat down with Blake and Rhonda to talk about it, I told them my goal is to make the hardest race that I can make out of seemingly easy terrain. That was the goal. I want people to look at this and underestimate it and say, because it's flat and because I'm going to have this tailwind and because of all these other things, this has to be the easiest race I can possibly ever do. And I wanted to lure people in under that guise of thinking it was going to be easy. And I knew that it wasn't. I had run it. You know, we do the staff runs out there where we give staff an opportunity to run the course like the runners are going to run it. And it's just, it can be very exhausting. Now on the flip side, while we talk about difficulty, we also have people to come and say, hey, it was a great race, and that might be one of the easiest hundreds I've ever run. So we don't hear that a lot, but we do hear it in all fairness. If you read Gary Cantrell's race report for Matt Mesquite, you'll notice that he points that out. Hey, I thought because I was in the mountains and I was training on hills that I would kick ass on flat, and I learned that's not the case. You know, he said this flat road takes its toll in, you know, in different ways, and Graveyard does it for 100 miles instead of 100K.
One of the things I was surprised about by the race when we did it in 2012 was, for the most part, a lack of traffic on fairly wide, you know, state highway. I understand why you guys had us carry lights and the vests and whatnot. In the evening, folks were going to and from restaurants or to and from their house. We saw a little more traffic then. But other than that, really desolate is a great word to describe it.
It really is desolate. And I love the desolation of that place. I mean, that's what makes it attractive to me. Personally, you know, I like it out there when it's like that. But and as far as the vests and the lights, yes, that's all there for safety. But more importantly, it's actually, those are National Park Service rules, you know, and we get a lot of questions about that. Do I have to wear a tail lamp? Well, if you want to run, I mean, 60 miles of this race is in the national park, and the national park says you have to. So, yeah, you're going to have to put it on.
You guys are about a month out from this year's race. Is registration still open, and what are your numbers looking like?
Registration is open. We've decided to cap it at 175 this year, and we're sitting pretty close to that. I think we're about 10 off. We're sitting in the 160s right now. If it doesn't fill out on its own in the next 2 weeks, we will shut it down and start finalizing the roster. I know the trend in ultras is to make registration go up. You know, how many registrations can I sell? We actually are going the opposite way with Graveyard. We've grown that from the first year, and then we had 140 some last year, and we're going to be up around 170 this year. My intention, and I've discussed it with Heather in detail, and you know, we go back and forth on it. My intention is actually to reduce registration for Graveyard next year and keep it as a small race. It's the family feel of ultras and the people that make the crowd special to me. And I really don't want that to get out of check. I would rather have a crowd of 100 or 120 people who all feel like family than a crowd of 500 who I don't know. You know, we see people at Graveyard, you know, 2 and 3 years in a row, and we see them at a lot of our other races, and we get to know them as people and their families. And that's something that I want to maintain, and I will never sacrifice that for how many people can I get on this course. So yeah, Graveyard, this is going to be the biggest it's ever going to be. The other thing we intend to do is drop the 100K next year, so it'll just be 100-mile only, and we're going back and forth on whether it'll be 100 or 120 cap, but it's definitely going to be much less than any other year.
Rachel and I previously directed a half marathon, and it grew from us expecting a few hundred people the first year to having over 2,000 in the last couple of years that we did it. And when we moved and we started the 100K that we're starting now, that small feel is what we were looking for. And you know, I think ultra running is unique in that that's what folks are looking for. They're looking for that community atmosphere.
Absolutely, 100%. What's special to me about race directing, there's no money in this. And so for the people that say they want to get into, I mean, make money, I say go for it. If you can, have a good time with it. But the payoff for me is in those relationships with those people, in seeing someone suffer and being there at the finish when they overcome that. When they're crying, I'm either crying or holding back tears. Heather's crying. That connection with those people, that is what pays for me. If it wasn't for that connection and for getting to know those people and for knowing about them and getting to experience big moments in their life with them, I would not do it. For that reason, that's why I want to keep. I find 100 to 120 to be a comfortable number with a lot of people that I recognize. That's that world where I want to live. If the people that want to have big races, hey, good on you. I hope you have great, big, successful races, but that's not what we want to do.
You mentioned earlier about trying to juggle the race directing and running. Are you still running, and do you have anything on your calendar for this year?
Yeah, I've always got stuff on the calendar. I'm actually registered for Umstead this year, and I felt like a giddy little schoolgirl getting her first date when I finally got in, because it was the fourth year that I tried, and I was on my way to pick up my son from Young Marines, and I pulled over on the side of the road on a hot spot, and I was sitting refresh, and I got in. And so I am supposed to run Umstead, and at this point in time, my training is way off from where it needs to be due to Pro 10 24, followed by Tar Heel Ultra, our multi-day, followed by Nusiok, followed by Maysville to Macon, which is this weekend, followed by Graveyard. So literally, it's been a race per month that we've been directing. And the Carolina Ultra Series that all of those races are a part of. So it's been tough to train. My training is off, but I know from experience that a lot of it is going to be mental. And so my intention at this time is to go in woefully undertrained, no doubt, and do my best to get a finish.
And do you have any races on your ultra bucket list?
Obviously, I intend to do Barkley, hopefully 1 year. That's not something that I have any chance of ever finishing. That's one that I want to do just because it's Barkley. So I get that's certainly bucket list. As far as any other bucket list races, Valmir Nunez has offered to crew me at the Brazil 135. I would say that's probably the forefront of my mind right now, just because he has become such a close friend of the family. He has been a gentleman in every way. I have the utmost respect for him as a person and as a runner, and the opportunity to be crewed by him in his home country, I would say, you know, not because it's 135 or because it's Brazil or whatever, but just because of that personal connection with Valmir, I guess that'd definitely be at the top of my list right now.
Brandon, we definitely appreciate you squeezing us into your schedule, and we wish you best of luck at Graveyard and all the other races. And of course, we hope you find some time to train for Umstead this year.
Me too. Thank you.
You know, in a short amount of time, Brandon's gone from not doing any ultras to now directing a fairly busy race calendar. It's kind of crazy to me that he's kind of just dived into the sport so quickly and taken on so much. Rachel, we went out to Graveyard and ran Graveyard, and ultimately it, like I said, it wasn't a great day for us. I know for you, the big issue was nutrition and being able to take in calories. And there was just a point your body couldn't handle more. And since then, we've tried a whole lot of other products, whether it was by Hammer Nutrition or the Goo Gels or just a variety of different things, trying to find what works best for us. And that's when we found out about Tailwind Nutrition.
Tailwind touts to be all that you need all day long, really. And it's really kind of an unimaginable claim. What I like looking at the product before we used it is the ingredient list is all things that you can pronounce. It's all natural ingredients. In fact, it's so easy, I bet my kids could pronounce it.
Dextrose, sucrose,
sodium,
citrate,
sea salt,
citric acid, organic lemon flavor, potassium chloride, calcium carbonate, magnesium citrate.
Dextrose, sodium, great. I can't do it.
Well, almost, not quite, but we're getting there. Now we'll head over to Colorado to talk to Jeff Vierling of Tailwind, and he is a ultra athlete and his wife as well, and together they have produced the Tailwind product.
All right, joining us today, we've got Jeff Vierling from Tailwind Nutrition. Jeff, can you quickly tell us what is Tailwind?
Tailwind, an endurance fuel that's designed to provide all you need to keep on going for as long as you want to go. So it's got calories and it's got electrolytes, and those are all in the proper mix with your hydration. So you're getting all three things that you need. And it's a powder, comes as dry powder, and you throw it into a bottle or into a hydration pack and just go.
From what I understand, there's kind of a story of why you came up with Tailwind. Can you briefly tell us what that is?
I've been doing the Leadville 100 mountain bike race. I'm a little more of a biker than I am a runner for about 12 years now. And when I started doing that, I was pretty naive about nutrition and what we really need to get through an event like that. And I really was trying some of the popular products out of the market and had a hard time. I was having stomach nausea issues and cramping issues. I got pretty frustrated with training hard for a race and then having those kind of show up on race day. So I jumped into some of the research and learned about how our bodies process fuel and what we really need, and started working on Tailwind because most of the products out in the market really weren't doing it right. And so I really focused in on making it so that Tailwind was very, very easy on your stomach and on your digestive system. That's really kind of the key thing, because you got to be able to get those calories in and keep doing it all day and not, not have an adverse reaction. And then to keep it very simple as well by including the electrolytes that you need in the proper proportion with the fuel and the water. And those turn out to be really synergistic as well. So, those two things, and then also, I think as an endurance athlete, we all know it gets tough to take things that are too sweet and too sticky for a long period of time. So focusing on a taste that's as close to water and mouthfeel as we can get, and really mild and not overpowering. And so those are the kind of three main things I focused on. And then the other piece of it was being able to use it in a hydration pack and not have it turn into a science experiment. The Tailwind does all those things, and we launched it about a year ago, and it's really been met with a lot of success. A lot of athletes are having good success with it in terms of being able to fuel successfully for very long events and hundreds, and not have stomach issues and keep energy levels up and feel good. So that's what we love to hear.
Well, and we've been trying it out, and one of the things you'd expect, one serving of it is about 100 calories, about what you would find in an energy gel, but for that amount of substance behind it, it's got a really light taste. How do you guys do that?
Well, I think you're hitting on something that's just a little bit different, because we're kind of a husband and wife team, myself and my wife Jenny, and both of us come from endurance. So we totally get it that having that overpowering taste is really, it's hard to take after multiple hours. And I think a lot of that just comes from that, a lot of products are designed to maybe taste good on the couch or taste good in the shop for a short period of time, but they're not necessarily oriented to using them for multiple hours. And so I've just really, you'll laugh, but this all got kind of started in our kitchen with our KitchenAid and lots of hours of experimentation. Part of it comes from our fuel source. Our primary fuel is glucose, which is a little bit less sweet than like a sucrose, which is a table sugar. And so kind of a little less sweetness is inherent in the fuel source, but then also a very light touch on the flavoring and just trying to find a balance between flavor and enough sweetness that you keep on wanting to drink it, but also some of the saltiness that comes from the electrolytes that you really kind of crave when you get sweaty.
And you mentioned the light sweetness from the simple sugars. So why did you guys go with the sucrose and dextrose, the simpler sugars, instead of like a complex carb or something that, you know, we hear about burns longer?
You know, when I started doing the research into, you know, how we process fuels, a couple of things really stood out. The first that came out is that even though, you know, even at a moderate pace, we might be burning around 500 plus calories an hour. Humans really can only, most of us can only take in somewhere between 200 and 300 calories and actually process that per hour, especially during exercise. The theoretical limit on that is somewhere around 400 calories per hour, but that's kind of at rest. And when you're out there running, that's just not the situation because your blood's getting diverted away from your digestive tract. So you're always running a calorie deficit, and that's kind of the first thing to understand. What that means for fueling strategies is, you know, first of all, you want to try and get in as much as you can within the boundaries of what we're capable of doing, and that will help offset what you're going to pull from your glycogen stores, which are limited. So there's really no reason that you would want to delay the absorption of your fuel. Since you are running that calorie deficit, your body really needs it now. It doesn't need it later. And then the second part of that is what a delayed absorption really means, another way of putting that, is it just takes more time to digest before it can be absorbed. And since digestion is compromised during exercise, that's one of the things that can trigger stomach discomfort or GI distress, especially when you get into multiple hours. So what the simple sugars are in Tailwind are really designed to be to match exactly what the small intestine is set up to absorb. We actually have little pumps in our small intestine that go out and grab glucose molecules and fructose molecules and move them into your system. That also requires the presence of sodium, which is why one of the reasons that the electrolytes make sense to take with your fuel. And then the third component of that is that process also sucks in water into, actively moves water into your bloodstream. So you end up with that, with synergy of the three when they're present together, that gives you the maximum uptake of all three. By choosing those fuels, then we're avoiding having to ask the digestive tract to process the fuels before they can be absorbed. And that's what kind of keeps Tailwind from spending a lot of time in your gut. It makes it makes you feel very light and just keeps everything moving through without stomach upset.
You mentioned that pairing the sodium with your nutrition intake. I have tried to balance multiple products at a time between taking the salt tab and the gel and my electrolyte drink. And I've had to try to use a spreadsheet to figure out how much I need for my race. And obviously that didn't work too well. I think that was the actual race that I DNF'd at due to stomach issues. So what is the benefit of Tailwind? Your slogan is all you need all day. So tell us how that works.
Yeah. I'm laughing, Rachel, because when I lined up at Leadville last year, I was lined up next to a woman who had a spreadsheet literally taped to her top tube of her bike because that's what she was using to try and track her nutrition and all the products that she was taking along the way. And I didn't say anything because, you know, you're not going to change anybody's nutrition right before a race. I don't know about you, but my brain gets a little bit addled after a few hours out there. And it's very tough to keep track of multiple products and when you're supposed to take it. Maybe you have a gel every 45 minutes. Maybe you've got a cell pill once an hour or two cell pills an hour. It depends on, you know, your conditions, and you're not sure exactly how much you should be taking. And then water is actually a very important component too, because you need a certain amount of water in order to process calories. So getting that all right is actually, I think, really, really challenging, really difficult. And that's one of the things that we're trying to fix with Tailwind, because the electrolytes are coming from what we're modeling. It's a model of what the average sweat rate is and the composition of sweat for a given amount of water. So when you're mixing up tailwind, you're replacing what you're sweating out. And the goal of that is to kind of maintain the electrolyte balance that you're starting the race with, and to keep the ratio between water and electrolytes steady. And those electrolytes also influence the absorption of your fuel. So they need to be there together as well. And by putting it together, it just takes some of the guesswork out of getting it right. As long as you're kind of keeping those ratios in approximately the right place, then your body's going to be able to function effectively. And that's really the goal, is just to facilitate your body to do its thing and be able to run as fast as you can, and not be compromised by being, too low or too high on your electrolytes, or too low or too high in your water intake, or on your fuel.
And the other thing with you guys' fuel is that it is straight carbs. There's no protein there. So after reading a little bit on your website, why did you guys choose to not put protein in there? And why do you think that gives you guys an advantage?
Yeah, so that's another thing that came out of the research into exercise nutrition and exercise science, which has evolved quite a bit in the last 10 to 15 years. And I think we've all heard that, hey, you need protein for endurance. That's been sort of a mantra for a long time. But the studies that have actually looked at the performance benefits of protein really haven't found it. And instead, what they found is that a carb-only versus a carb-plus-protein approach really produced about the same results in real races with real athletes. But protein is correlated with GI distress, digestive distress. And that makes sense, because protein is a very complex molecule, and it takes a long time for the digestive tract to break it down into something that's absorbable. So, for a lot of runners and a lot of bikers as well, asking your digestive system to go handle a big complex molecule is more than it can take. And that's where things can kind of shut down, slow down, back up, and you start feeling bad. So that's one of the keys that I took out of it and really tried to make with Tailwind to make it easy on your stomach, is to eliminate protein, which has that propensity to cause problems.
And I've noticed on your sample pack, it says you mix one of those packets and you make two large bottles or four smaller bottles, and then you consume those over 2 hours. Does that consumption, do you vary it based on weather? For instance, in the colder weather, do I need to mix it differently than I would in the hotter weather when I'm going to be sweating more?
So generally speaking, there's a relationship between water and calories, and it varies by person. So what we kind of suggest is that for, say, if you were trying to do 250 calories an hour, we would say start out at 24 ounces. If you're doing 200 calories in an hour, you could get away more with something like 20 to 22 ounces of water. When you're in a hot situation where you might be drinking more than that, you'd want to kind of keep the same calories, but then just up the water content. And we do also have folks in the winter, that'll drink a little less than that. And that's where it kind of comes down to your personal ability, how many calories your digestive system can handle for a given amount of water. And that's a little bit of an experimentation. It varies quite a bit person to person. Generally speaking, you want to kind of keep your calories the same winter to summer, but you're going to vary the amount of water that you take in to support how much you're sweating.
And the other thing we noticed, and I think you guys have a product coming out here soon, what about caffeine mixed with these drinks?
One of the things in approaching Tailwind is I really wanted to just put in the ingredients that really benefit performance, not fall into the trap of that a lot of products out there do, where they're just kind of advertising four-syllable pixie dust, if you will, that really doesn't have any proven benefit. So if you look at our ingredient label, it's very, very simple. But also, if you look at the exercise science, the one supplement that has demonstrable performance benefit is caffeine. And we heard from a lot of our customers that, especially customers that are used to drinking caffeine over the course of a regular day, they wanted to be able to keep that up while they're out there on the course. And then particularly as they head into just low energy periods or at night. You know, we did jump back into the research and tried to come up with a good amount of caffeine that's going to give a central nervous system boost, and over time will build up into the levels that deliver an ergogenic boost as well, but at the same time not get into a situation where you'd overload. So there's kind of a balance point there. So just last week we released our first caffeinated version of Tailwind, and it has all the same base, so you're still getting all your calories and all your electrolytes, but it adds in that caffeine as well. So that's called Raspberry Buzz. That's our first flavor. They're still working on some other things as well.
I like the innovation and the new things coming out there. So if you can, let's walk through a basic scenario. Rachel and I obviously are ultra runners. I have in particular a 50-mile race coming up in a few weeks. I've had issues in fueling in the past, in particular with drinks that had protein in it, where I end up running faster than I should to be able to actually process those calories. And I'm looking to make the switch to something like Tailwind. So with Tailwind and a 50-mile race where, you know, I'm expecting to be out there between 8 and 9 hours, what kind of quantity of product am I going to need? You know, how am I going to mix that in a 20-ounce bottle, et cetera? Can you walk us through a little bit of that?
You know, I would say generally what I recommend is that you start out at a 250 calories an hour. And around 24 ounces of water an hour. And then you're going to probably have to experiment a little bit with that with training to see how that sits with you and whether that's a suitable amount of calories. What you're aiming for is to not feel hungry, but at the same time also not kind of feel bloated or full. 250 is a good starting point for something that's going to go longer than 2.5-3 hours. What you do is just measure out the amounts that you're going to need and have it at the different aid stations, or if you've got a pack, you can carry it with you in baggies and then add it to your hydration pack or your bottles and go from there. One of the things we've done is we have this thing called the Tailwind Challenge, and what it is a 4-package, so you get like 4 large bags, and the intention is for you to train with that. So you have a chance to get out there and really use it in conditions that are like your race and dial it in, you know, figure out, hey, is it 250 calories an hour or am I more like 225? Or we have, you know, more petite folks who might be at 200 calories an hour. So figuring that out and getting it dialed in, being comfortable with the product and how it works with your system, and then racing. And part of the challenge is that if it doesn't work for you, if you don't like it and you don't love it at the end of the race, then we'll refund your entry fee. Just feel like that's how you do it with endurance racing. You want to train with things before you go out and race it, so that you're not, you know, jumping in something new, you know, right at race day. And that's worked really well. I think, you know, really lots of people have taken us up on that, and for the most part, it's been really successful.
That's a really awesome guarantee, a way of, you know, showing that you guys back your product. I have a really simple question for you. Mm-hmm. What flavors do you have now, and which is your favorite?
So I started making the Mandarin Orange was the first flavor I did, and I did that for myself, and that's still my favorite. And then we have a berry. And I should mention, there's really no difference in the base product between the different flavors. They're all doing the same thing, but our taste buds are just different. So berry tastes a little bit sweeter, so folks who like a little bit of a sweeter taste to it tend to like the berry more. And then we've got a lemon. The lemon is our most, I'd say, our controversial flavor. People who like lemon love it and just swear by it. And then there are other people who are like, don't like it at all. So that one's kind of polarized. You either love it or don't. And then we also have an unflavored, and that's proving to be pretty popular, especially for folks doing 50s and 100s, because it's just super minimal on the flavor. It does still have a little bit of flavor to it, a little bit of sweetness and a little bit of, I'd say, like a white citrus. But very, very mild. And then in the caffeinated version, we have a raspberry buzz, which would be closer to the berry in terms of a sweetness to your palate.
Which is the most popular flavor?
We sell the most of mandarin orange. I'd say it goes mandarin orange, and then berry would be our second.
Well, we're trying the lemon now, and coming from a lemon, lime, and orange Gatorade background, I'm definitely those are definitely my favorite so far, or at least the lemon that we've had. I'm looking forward to trying the orange. The other thing is, you know, one of the things at Ultras that aid stations are known for is grazing over some of the other food. Can that hurt what folks are fueling with Tailwind? Or is it still okay for them to supplement with some solid food as they feel they might need it?
Yeah, you know, we have customers who do it both ways. You know, some who just stay purely with Tailwind and go liquid all the way. And then also a lot of folks who like to stop at the aid station and have something along the way. And that's totally fine. What we say is that you should keep with your calorie target and try and reduce the amount of Tailwind that you're taking in. For the time period that you're also eating some solid foods, and that way you're going to avoid overloading your gut. The Tailwind's going to work fine with what you choose to eat, but you still need kind of the same amount of water for a given amount of calories. So if you want to keep your water level up, you might just say maybe out, instead of two scoops of Tailwind, which would be 200 calories, you drop it down to one scoop and then finish out another, you know, 100, 150 calories with something that you get at the aid station.
And if folks want to try Tailwind Nutrition, of course, they can go to your website, which is tailwindnutrition.com. Mm-hmm. And you guys are also in some retailers. Is that mostly local, regional, like running type stores, or where can people find you in store?
We do probably, I would say, 85, 90% of the sales that we do are online. And one of the things we love doing is we love working with customers just individually and helping them dial in their nutrition. So, you know, we end up helping a lot of customers. They'll email us with a question or a problem or something, and we'll try and help them out and get that all set for the races. So we're very, very happy to do that. And then sort of increasingly, we've got a number of shops that are carrying Tailwind, and that's mostly been driven by customers. So customers who like to shop at a local store, we'll ask their store to contact us, and we're happy to supply it that way as well. So we have that on our website at tailwindnutrition.com, and under the FAQ section, there's a listing of all the shops that we have currently. And it's kind of a mixture of running shops and cycling shops, too.
For folks who are wanting to try it out, you guys have a sample pack in your online store, right?
We do like a four-pack, a sample pack, so you can just get an assorted sample pack, and that's a quick and easy way to try out all the flavors. And each of those small packages makes two large bottles, or so 48 ounces of liquid. So it's a decent amount to give it a good test.
That's what we got. And mm-hmm. We're also going to be giving away another one of those sample packs for our question of the week this week. So if folks respond, they can get to win another sample pack. Jeff, we really appreciate the time and learning more about Tailwind. Me personally, I'm excited to give it a shot and see if it can help my fueling and prevent the bonks that I seem to inevitably get at nearly every race that I've ever done. I'll definitely keep in touch, let you know how it goes, and I'm looking forward to trying the product a little more.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
We appreciate you coming on and talking with us, Jeff, and we hope some folks start contacting you with some interest in some orders. And like you said, questions. You guys were really quick at responding to me, and I've heard that your customer service has that reputation.
We're endurance athletes, too, and you know, we kind of offer Tailwind in that spirit of just athletes helping athletes. That's where we get our best information, and we're happy to share all we've learned along this journey.
You know, I've gotten to use Tailwind now a few times after we bought our sample pack, and really the few things I like about it are, number one, it's got a good flavor but not overpowering. So you may be taking in a decent amount of calories, but it doesn't feel like you're taking in a lot of calories. And I think to me that'll stand up pretty well in a longer race. But also it's easy to mix. So I remember using a different product recently that we use and trying to mix it up, and it just has a chalky flavor. And if you don't immediately try to mix it really well in the bottle, it kind of forms a sediment on the bottom, and then it's impossible to mix. But Tailwind seems to mix very, very well, very easily. And when I've used it on longer runs, I think I've only gone up to about 20 miles with it. It has a nice, good level of energy throughout. So I'm so far pretty happy with it, and I believe I'll be using it for my 50-miler coming up soon. We really appreciate the time with Jeff, and we are happy to be able to give away another sample of Tailwind Nutrition this week.
And to earn that Tailwind Nutrition sample, we asked you guys to tell us, how do you track your miles? And we received lots of good responses. We encourage you guys to head over to the Question of the Week post and see what other people suggested. You might find something that works good for you. But the winner this week was Justin Rigdon, and he says he tracks his miles using all kinds of ways, the Nike app, Strava, and even pencil and paper and iPhone calendar. I never thought about using the calendar online to track your miles, but that's a great one. Congratulations, Justin. We'll be getting in touch with you and sending Tailwind Nutrition your way.
And be sure to catch our Question of the Week next week and submit your responses for a chance to win another cool product.
And head on over to operationultra.com/episode5 for our show notes. There'll be a link for Race NC events and Tailwind Nutrition.
We want to hear from you. We've got a lot of ways you can get in touch with us through email, info@operationultra.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/operationultra. Of course, we're on Twitter at Operation Ultra, and you can also leave a comment on our blog.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe on iTunes.
And you can help spread the word by leaving a rating or a comment on the podcast. And until next time,
happy trails.
And we'll see you next week.